I have been wanting to have this conversation ever since I've had Hema Prasad on the podcast. So thank you so much for making the time today and joining me.
Oh, no, I'm really excited. I loved the episode that you and Hema did. So I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. I've been following your content. It's been really resonating with me on many different levels. I really wanted to have a raw, honest chat about worthiness. And also just when I think about embodying who we are as women, this is a conversation for the girls and women out there that really want to embody themselves. I'll start with telling you why I started thinking about this. So I went to see the Beyonce movie over the Christmas break. Yes. And I left there and I was just like, holy shit. Like there's something different that I see in her. People always talk about her as a queen, right? But like, there's an energy. You feel it through the screen when you're watching her documentary. Like there's something different that has shifted for her, that has allowed her to embody all of herself, all of the facets of who she is. And I was so drawn to that because it made me reflect on my own life. Quite honestly, there are a lot of places in my life where I feel like I am playing small. And I'm almost a little bit envious of her when I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, wow, like, how do you get there? How do you get from here to there? You know? And so it's been kind of festering for me ever since December. And I'm so glad. I feel like you're the right person to have this conversation with. And maybe my first question here is, in your opinion, why is it so difficult for us to embody who we are?
Yeah, the small conversation, it's a narrative that I battle with myself personally very frequently, playing myself small, playing the background role, believing that my way to gaining favor or gaining advancement is to be small so that other people feel big around me. And then they want me around them because I make them feel big. Mm-hmm. And really working on trying to figure out, how do I continue to reverse that? How do I continue to find ways to just continuously take up just a little bit more space each time? Mm-hmm. So prior to becoming this version of a coach that I am, I used to do like a little side hustle thing, motivating women to work out. So I would have like accountability groups for women, and we would do like online workout programs, and I would provide motivation tips, that kind of thing. And an interesting thing would happen every time I would recommend that we did a program that had weights associated with it, like heavier weights.
Yeah.
And a lot of women were like, I don't want to do that because I don't want to become bulky.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about it is like, that perception that if I do even a little, it's going to change my physique. I'm going to become a more masculine version of myself that doesn't feel appealing, that doesn't feel feminine. And it's like, as a woman, to become bulky, you have to be so incredibly intentional mm-hmm. about your protein, your macros, like counting calories, continuously increasing your weight. Like picking up this 10-pound weight every few days isn't going to do it. And I think that's how we often think about taking up space, is that we are so afraid that even doing a little bit is going to send us into that other spectrum of being like, oh, well, she's too much. Or, right. Oh, well, you know, she's too assertive, or now she's just aggressive, or now she's angry. And I think in a lot of ways, there is that threat of us doing it, but it causes us to shy away from even doing a small amount to take up a bit more space and testing the waters, because we assume that if we take up just a little bit more space, we're going to get kicked out of the room
mm-hmm.
because okay. people are going to think that, oh, we're stepping out of line, and they're more comfortable if we're smaller. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's one of the fine lines that we try to balance as women. It's like, how do we take up just a little bit more space each time without the fear that we're completely changing our DNA or turning into a person that we're not proud to become.
Mm. What are the indicators of playing small in my life? Like, how would I know so I could intercept that and make like a mind shift before I take the action of playing small or of not saying what I really feel? How would I know that in my own life? Like, are there indicators of playing small?
And I wish there was like an easy answer for it, but it's so sneaky. Because the thing with limiting beliefs and playing small is that we are very good at justifying our actions to make it seem like, oh, no, we're not playing small. Like, it's fine. Like, we're doing okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that where you can start to pay attention to those cues is if there's a certain action that's like nagging at you. If you have an interaction with somebody, or let's just say you were in a meeting, or let's just say you were pitching, and something just continues to not sit right with you. Or if you make a decision about a career choice, and something about it just continues to not sit right with you, it may be an indication to look at that a little bit closer, because that might be the area where you're playing yourself small. I think even for myself, because this is a narrative that I do have to battle, every time I'm kind of setting new goals for myself, I'll set that goal. But if I continue to kind of keep questioning it or thinking about it or being like, oh, is that really what I want to do? It sometimes is an indication of that's actually not aligned with what you want. It's more aligned with the version of yourself that you think is going to be more acceptable to others. Mm-hmm. So that's why you've chosen it. So it's not like an easy canned answer. Like when you feel this, then that means that you're playing yourself small. Or when you find yourself holding yourself back in meetings, then you're playing yourself small. I think if you leave a meeting and you feel like there's more to have examined there, or you can't seem to let go of it, there could be an indication there. There's a gap between who you believe you should be, you mm-hmm. could be, and how you showed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that space in between, that friction in between, is the thing that just nags at you, right? I'll tell you this funny thing that happened yesterday. So I did this behind the scenes of putting my podcast studio together.
Yes, and I saw that.
Yeah, I saw that you liked it. And I thought it was really funny when you did. And I'll tell you why. So I had seen Hama do your office, redo your office. And so I was like, oh, that's a great idea with the books. I have a ton of books in my house. And I was like, let me just order them in the color of the books. So I'm putting that together and then I'm narrating over that. And I thought to myself, oh, I'll give Hama a shout out because I got this idea from her and Lauren. And I was like, oh, you know, you shouldn't really do that because Lauren has a bigger bookshelf than you. Your books are just, your shelf is not that big. Why does it matter? And I was like, you know, I had to really like pep talk myself out of that very small thing just because I didn't want to seem too much, right? Like I didn't want there to be an extra notification on Hema's page or whatever that just wasn't as grand as your bookshelf, if I'm being completely honest. Yeah. It's the weirdest fucking thing.
Yeah.
But I literally was like, I think this is not a big deal. Like just shout out Hema and it'll be totally fine. And I just really had to pep talk myself out of it. It is those small, sneaky things, especially when it comes to even social media, putting your face out there, advocating for yourself, saying your opinion in a caption. All of those small things are those nagging feelings for me. It's where I feel like I play small, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting you talk about social media. It's one of the things that my clients come up against all the time, is that fear of being too much on social media, because there's a lot of negative connotation around social media. Like, oh, you'll hear people say like people need to broadcast all these things about their life. So there is that constant script of when am I doing too much? And it's even funny in that situation, because again, back to the working out, like, do you know how hard it is for your content to be seen on social media? Like it's not easy. So you would have to be doing the most, the absolute most, for anyone to get sick of you, for anyone to feel like, oh my gosh, this is too much. I can't take any more of this person.
Yeah.
And if you do actually get to that level with people, congratulations, because you figured out something in the algorithm that most people cannot.
Right.
So, but again, it's that story that we tell ourselves about even doing a little bit and then associating it with the most. And even, you know, reflecting on Beyonce, even like her whole career, I'll never forget when she came out with the Bow Down song, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was such a switch. That was such a switch from her normal like female empowerment content to just come out and be like, actually, bitches, you're not even on my level.
Right.
And the fact that there was some disruption. There was some disruption that was happening. People were just like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. Mm-hmm. But then eventually people just started to get on board with this new persona and started to feel empowered by that energy. So I think that the same kind of goes when we make those adjustments. It might make people uncomfortable at first, but I'm going to be okay and you're going to be okay.
Right.
And as long as I stay consistent with this program, you're actually going to get on board one way or another.
Yeah, because you're setting the tone for that relationship, for that room.
Exactly.
You're setting the precedence for what's going to happen here. I've felt that shift in myself over the last year. I've been feeling like I've really come into my own power in very small ways in my life, right? And but the other part that I still can't seem to shake exactly yet, and maybe it's a process, is the expectations of others. Like we just talked about social media. So even that, the expectations of even my friends and my family, you know, whatever I'm putting out there, right? There's this always in the back of my head of like, they're saying, and I don't even know if they're saying it, who does she think she is to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you hear that a lot from your clients. What do you say to that?
What I say to that is stop expecting that you're never going to feel that way. Stop expecting that you're never going to care about what other people think. And I think that people who say, I don't care what others think, we're actually not biologically wired to operate that way. We are biologically wired to care or consider what other people think because our survival is linked to our social acceptance. Mm-hmm. If we're part of the group, then we have access to protection. We have access to resources. We have access to longevity of life. Mm-hmm. So this notion of, oh, I should just never care what other people think, it's not realistic and you're not wired to do that. That being said, you can identify where the stories are hindering you. Mm-hmm. And you can overcome those stories. But every time you find yourself at a new threshold of expanding into something bigger, that narrative's going to come back. And I think that just accepting the fact that it's okay that that's coming back. It's okay that I'm worried about what my parents think, mm-hmm. because that must mean that I'm doing something that is foreign to all of us.
Right.
I'm stretching myself outside of my comfort zone because if I was doing exactly what everyone else wanted me to do and ignoring what I wanted, I would never feel that way. I would never feel that friction of like, what will other people think? I know what they think. They're happy. But the fact that I'm looking to expand myself into new territory, into new thoughts, to become a bigger version of myself, it makes sense that I'm considering how other people are going to react, mm-hmm. because biologically, I'm wired to consider how other people are going to react. Mm-hmm.
So don't feel guilty for it, because that's what I feel, right? Like I feel like, oh, you know, why am I even thinking about this? You shouldn't care what other people think. But I do. I'm a human being. It's part of my human fabric. Like I do care about what my friends and family think. And it's just that debacle, that constant, like they are not thinking what you're thinking. So keep doing what you're doing, you know, or if it feels aligned, this action feels aligned, just keep doing what you feel is right for you. Yeah. I know a little bit about your story, that you left your corporate job and you talked a little bit about it actually just now, where you said you had a side hustle. I'm sure it's one of many side hustles that you've had, but now you're a coach, and I want to know about that pivot and why you made that change, but also what had to change inside of you for that change to occur.
So much. So much. It's exhausting to even think about. Why I made the change. I made the change because there was that nagging dissonance, mm-hmm. between what I was doing and who I felt I really was. When I was working in my corporate job, I was doing really well. You know what I mean? Like I was on the track to become a VP in the organization, really influential and continuously being promoted, continuously being tapped for stretch opportunities. Mm-hmm. So there was just a lot going on there. And I had this theory. Because of what I was doing, I was in the tech co industry. Because that was never my background, or technology, IT, it's not really my brand. It's not really what I'm interested in. And I think it really hit home for me when I came to LA in 2020 and I threw my sister a baby shower. Hmm. And of course, because I'm in this new space now and I'm meeting new people, people are coming up and they're curious. They're like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And there was always this stutter and this hesitation because I just didn't want people to associate what I did with who I was. Mm. So I kind of felt this urge to explain what I did, but also back it up with, that's not really who I am, though. I actually am not interested in technology, you know? So that dissonance, it was always something that was nagging at me, mm-hmm. but it really kind of came to a head where I was like, okay, this isn't going away. this nagging feeling of you're not bringing your full potential, like you're doing what you can do, not what you want to do.
Right.
And the organization, the people that I worked for, bless their hearts, they saw so much potential in me and they were constantly trying to find new opportunities and new ways to invigorate me. But at the end of the day, you're a tech company and there's only so much that you can offer me that's really going to be in line with what motivates me or light me up. So they didn't know what to do with me. That was like a narrative, like we don't know what to do with Lauren. And so there was this sense of like, wow, they're playing me really small. And it makes sense why they're playing me small, because I don't know how to teach anyone how to play me big, because I've never done it for myself before. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of sort of the Kickstarter to say, you know, you've always had this theory, Lauren, that if you could do this well at a job that you don't care about, what would happen if you applied those skills to something that you were interested in and you felt purposeful about and actually utilized all your strength? You'd be a rocket ship. You'd be amazing. You'd be incredible. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to say that, and then it's quite the other thing to now try to prove it to see whether or not it's right. Yeah. And yeah. I think that that for me just came to a point where I'm like, well, now I just got to see if I'm bullshitting myself.
That part though, when you, after you make the decision, right? I think making the decision is the easy thing.
It is.
Because it's like you can hype yourself up in a real way. I actually have this experience also. I started a business last year in the middle of summer, completely separate from the podcast. And I made the decision quite quickly. But now I have to prove it to myself every single day, right? We're like 6 months in or 7 months in. And I find that sustaining that over time is the part that is very difficult for me. Yeah. And probably other people that are listening to this that have made the decision, but it's the daily actions that you have to take. And then the daily actions that you're taking without seeing results. So it's really you against you and you proving yourself to you, you have it stacking, right? So how did you get through that part of the process for you?
Yeah. And even what you're talking about there is a reason why it's February and so many people have fallen off of their resolutions or their goals, because to your point, making the decision was easy. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to launch that business. And then there's something that happens along the way that causes 80% of people to exit stage left. And the important thing, again, to realize, like, it's not a you problem. It's a process.
Yeah.
It's a process of change. And once you understand that there's a process to change, then you can kind of see it not as like a, oh my gosh, it must be me. I must not be cut out for this. And to say, no, what tools do I actually need to get through this? So the process is the emotional cycle of change, right? Mm-hmm. And there's 5 stages to this emotional cycle of change. Stage 1 is uninformed optimism. And to your point, that's when you're excited about your goal. I'm going to launch this business. It's going to be amazing. I'm going to be so good at it. What could go wrong?
Right.
It's awesome. Then after stage 1 is passed and you start to do some of the work, you enter into stage 2, which is called informed pessimism. So uninformed optimism, you didn't know anything. You just were like, this is going to be cool. Mm-hmm. You start doing the work, you start gathering information. Now you enter into informed pessimism. Okay. So informed pessimism is where you start to kind of realize like, oh my gosh, this is actually harder than I thought it would be. Or this is going to require much more work than I thought it would require. Mm-hmm. Do I want to sign up for this? Like, do I actually want to do this? And it doesn't feel as good as I thought it would when I thought of the idea. So maybe I'm just attached to the wrong idea.
Right.
But I liked how I felt in stage 1. So let me go back to stage 1. And this is where people like ping pong ideas back and forth, where they start something and then they abandon it. And they're like, I'll start something different. And then they abandon it. Now for the people, so for the 20% who haven't quit, they get to graduate to what's called the Valley of Despair. And that's phase 3. The Valley of Despair is where you start to feel really crushed by the hopelessness of your actions. You're not seeing the results. You're questioning yourself. You're clouded in self-doubt. You don't think that you're the right person to do this. And it's so dark in front of you. You don't even know what steps to take next. And here, like, self-doubt just isn't present. Like, it is consuming. at this point. And this is, again, where if people do get down to this phase, it's a prime place to quit, because so many people who you look to for support at that time will be like, you know what? You could just go back to doing this. Like, what was so wrong with how you were before? And you'll even start to romanticize, kind of like a bad relationship. Like, why did I get out of that to begin with? Like, he was so nice.
It wasn't so bad, you know?
Right? But it was comfortable and it was better than this. That's the thing. It wasn't great, but it was better than this. This isn't signed up to feel.
Yeah.
And it's only the people who push through that valley of despair who get to the next stage, which is phase 4. And that's called informed optimism, where now the fruit, like, you're starting to see results, like things are starting to turn around a bit. You're getting responses, like people on social media are starting to notice, or whatever the case is. You get something that boosts your confidence, which will get you into stage 5, which is success and completion. So once you understand that it's not you, it's a cycle. And understand that everyone wishes there was a bridge over that valley when they have an idea, but there is no bridge. Mm. You have to go through the valley. It has to suck.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't really matter to you that much.
Yeah. And you have skin in the game. That's why it
exactly
hurts. You know, that's why sometimes it just, you're like, man, like, I don't know if I can sustain this as a person. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think just knowing that process, those steps would be incredibly helpful to also everyone listening to this, because it's kind of like, you know, when you go to the gym and you're building your muscles, you don't expect to like see results tomorrow, but you know that things are happening with that muscle, like tissues are being torn and your muscle's getting bigger. And that's why you keep the process, because you know that eventually you'll see the difference.
When you feel that muscle pain, you're just like, oh, something's happening here.
Right.
Because of the muscle pain.
Right.
You like, if I push through it, this is going to grow.
Yeah. You even hear some guys saying that, like, oh, the soreness feels good. Like, I've heard guys say that. But it's so funny, because when you come to building a business and betting on yourself, that same soreness and pain does not feel good. And you don't correlate that with the fact that you are growing, that something is happening inside of you. And also there's light beyond the tunnel that you're in right now, you know?
Yeah. And it's not even in the gym. It's not even the soreness feels good. It's the value that I give to the soreness that makes it feel good.
Right.
The
right.
soreness in and of itself sucks, right?
Yeah.
It hurts, but it's the value, because I attribute that soreness to progress and growth. I feel good when I feel it, because I'm just like, oh, this must mean that I'm working something. Something is happening. Results are happening somewhere where I can't see it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Underneath the surface. And so maybe that's it, right? Like, maybe whatever we're attaching to the uncomfortableness in our life, maybe we just need to change that attachment.
You change the value of it. And that's the same thing that goes for imposter syndrome, self-doubt, loneliness, playing small. Like, again, a lot of us, when we have these feelings or these occurrences that come up, these thoughts, these doubts, we can easily attribute it to, maybe it's an indication that I'm just not good enough for that next level. Mm-hmm. So the value that we give to, like, imposter syndrome is the value of an authority. Who do you think you are to XYZ? Yeah, you're right. Let me back down. Mm-hmm. Because you must be challenging me for a reason, versus giving it the value of an indication that you're onto something bigger. Now you appreciate it a little bit differently and you work with it a little bit differently. You're not just listening to it per se, but you're collaborating with it to make your case stronger.
Right, right. I think a lot of these things too that we feel comes from worthiness. At least I feel that about myself. I have a really big pitch tomorrow. Everything leading up to this pitch that I have with this big company, it challenged my worthiness. A lot of, like, who do you think you are? Or this company, seeing these types of pitches all day long, I'm sure people come to them all the time. Why would you make a difference? You know? So when you're working with people that have issues around worthiness, how do you start to handle that with them? And how can we take some practical steps, apply it to our own lives if we have that issue?
Yeah. Like, the one thing I wish that everyone would just start to believe is, like, you're not special or different. Mm-hmm. And it sounds harsh, but I think it gets us out of that shame cycle of believing that maybe I'm part of this very special group that experiences this, and other people don't fight feelings of worthiness, or other people who are successful don't need to combat these feelings. And because I have this, this could be an indication that maybe I'm not worthy, or maybe I don't belong in that group, versus looking at it as, no, anyone with a human brain is battling similar narratives. Again, when they are exposing themselves to something that could lead to embarrassment or social rejection. Because again, our brain is wired to protect us from that. Because you're going in to pitch something, it's vulnerable, and your brain wants to protect you from feeling that social rejection for all the reasons that we talked about when it comes to linked to our survival. Yes. So save yourself at least that layer of shame spiraling and say, I'm experiencing this feeling because I'm a human being that is stretching out of my comfort zone, and something inside of me is wanting to protect me from social rejection or embarrassment. That's all that is. Mm-hmm. Once we kind of get there, we can say, okay, when I go to, this is the thing that I usually do with my clients when they ask that question, who am I to? Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that I have to do with myself as well.
Yeah.
Who am I to win this business? That's usually the question that I usually ask my client, like, what is the question that you're most afraid of getting in that room? And that usually is the question that comes up. Who do you think you are to give this business to us, or to be the one to do this? Mm-hmm. So I said, let's just answer that question. Answer that question right here, right now. Who are you? What is your experience? What do you have to offer? How do you know that you are the right person? And typically, when the client answers that question, if I push them to like list off 20 reasons, mm-hmm. it's so crazy how suddenly they go from feeling small to feeling empowered, to the point where they get to the end of that exercise, they're like, who am I not to?
Awesome.
I'm amazing. Like, why would you not go for this? Mm-hmm. And the reason is because we are constantly on the lookout for threat, and especially for high achievers will instinctively measure themselves against what they're not. And a part of that is just as a mode to like keep the edge up, not wanting to be complacent, all of those things. Mm-hmm. That they forget, or we forget, to take inventory of what we've accomplished. And that's exactly what we need in those moments. Because answering the question in advance, the question that you're afraid to get asked in advance, forces you to look backwards and be like, well, I did this, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I did this, I did this, I did this. And you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You tell me why I shouldn't get this, because I've got all the answers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, really good way of looking at it. It also puts the power back in your court, right? Like seeing all the things that you've done and who you are, right? And who's really walking into that room. Because I think that when you're faced with these situations, it makes you feel very powerless and very helpless, because you've these things that you've been thinking about are now monsters in your head, right? Yes. But this way, and these questions, those questions that you listed off, actually puts all the balls back in your court, and now you can serve, you know?
Exactly. And at least it may even, I'm not going to say it always is going to reveal strengths, but it might reveal some gaps. And that's a good test too. I actually may not have an answer for this part. Maybe that's something that I need to go and develop a little bit more, or do some more research on. Again, using that voice, not as an authority, but as a collaborator to help you to foolproof your pitch. I used to say this when I would do executive communications all the time, is that anytime I would send an email to an SVP or the CEO or whatever, I would always read the email and think to myself, what questions might they ask?
Right.
And how can I answer that question up front? Mm-hmm. Because when you do that, you're strengthening your pitch, you're strengthening your knowledge, mm-hmm. and you can be a little less fearful about the outcome, because you feel like, oh, no, I've actually thought this through, or I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. It's like you're like working backwards, you know,
working backwards.
Yeah.
Working backwards. I had to learn that lesson the hard way, because I would send emails and they would just fill me with all this work. Yeah. All of these questions that they had. And I would be like, oh my gosh.
You hadn't thought about this.
I didn't think about this. Like, yeah. This makes me, but if I do that thought and process in advance, mm-hmm. it makes my communication stronger. And then when you get that email back that just says, thank you, like close the laptop, I'm done for the day. Like, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. When we're thinking about insecurities and these fears that we have, a lot of it come from childhood, things that we've observed and it's just lodged in our subconscious, perhaps. And yeah, as we do a lot of work on ourselves, these things come up. But I want to ask this particular question because I think you might have some experience with this as it relates to women and women that have sisters and that have sisters that are also high achievers. So I have a sister that she's very, very much like an introvert. And I was thinking about this recently because she's been wanting to go for a promotion in her job. So it's a little bit out of her comfort zone. I'm the older sister by 7 years, and she's had a sister that's always been a high achiever, an overachiever, right? And she's always kind of been in the shadow of me. I also know that you have a sister that is out there in the world. Yep. How do you deal with, I don't know if the right word is overcoming that, but how do you figure out who you are in the middle of that?
It's difficult. It's difficult, especially in the case with my sister, because when we were building our lives, I went kind of the corporate stream and she went bigger risk, bigger exposure, that type of thing. She created a bigger name for herself. So, well, even when I was talking about pivoting or moving, I had a friend actually say to me when I said, oh, I'm moving to LA and I think Shan and I are going to join forces, we're going to work together. He said to me, he was like, you have your own identity established here. You have everything established here. What are you going to do? Just go to LA and be Shan's sister? As if like this pivot was going to cause me to lose my identity. Mm-hmm. And I would no longer be Lauren Morrison. Mm-hmm. I'd be Shan's sister. And it is a difficult narrative to continuous, because that is from childhood, right? Like that is something that, it's a pattern that continuously repeats itself. The only thing that I can really do is be aware of it, aware of the trigger, aware of the sting, and not expect it to go away completely, but provide myself with a process to challenge it when it does come up for me. That kind of goes back to the whole shrinking, because if I don't continue to put myself out there and live into my own identity, then I am at risk of shrinking into myself. I don't know if I'm making sense here a lot.
Oh, no, you are.
I'm like processing it as I go through it, but it is definitely something that I can only, my tool is not to necessarily said, I don't feel that way anymore, or I don't think that way anymore, but it's to recognize that if I do think that way, if I do feel that way, it's okay. As long as I am continuously using that as a trigger to start a conversation with myself. Yeah. And that's what I have started to do. If I feel that way, start having that conversation with yourself. What do you believe that this person is saying to you? What impact is that having on how you feel about yourself? What beliefs is it bringing up about yourself right now? And what evidence can you go and get that would help to dismantle that belief that says you are only this
one version
of, answered your question.
Sometimes I never know, you know, what questions will truly pop out of my mouth, but it is something that I felt that you would have experience with. And then also, you know, as you're speaking to a whole group of sisters out there that also feel the same way silently, perhaps, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said about that, right? Mm-hmm. That's a conversation that's not had very much.
But well, there's a role that sisters definitely play. Like as an older sister, you know, my role has always been to be the supporter, be the sturdy one. And that has served my relationship with my sister in a lot of ways. I just have to be mindful of where it's not serving me. Right.
Right.
And she would feel the same way too on her side. Like there are things that she has historically done when it comes to me that has benefited our relationship overall. And now we just have to find a way to say like, yeah, but here's where I actually need to provide a boundary. Mm-hmm. Here's where I actually am if I do this, I'm actually going to start losing myself in a way that I'm not good with. And even like a stupid example, you know, my sister asked me to join a soccer team with her last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't play soccer. I hate soccer. But I want to make my sister happy. I have a close relationship with her. I came out here to be closer to her. You know, like I'm not working with her in the way that we thought we would before. So the least you could do is play soccer with her. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
And then I just had to eventually kind of get to a point where I'm like, this isn't just like me coming out and playing soccer, or this is actually, because I don't like soccer and I don't know anything about it, I was finding myself dreading the activity of soccer. Like I'm checking my emails, like, please cancel the game, please cancel the game, please cancel the game. It got to the point where it's like that dread was like taking over time that I could have been using to like grow my business. It wasn't just an hour on a Sunday for my sister, mm-hmm. but it was actually, you know, finding its way into other areas of my life. Mm-hmm. And I had to overcome that guilt and that role that I believed I needed to play in order to say that I love you and I'm happy to explore ways for us to spend time together, but not in this way.
Right, right.
Because it's now me trying to do this for you is really taking away from me mm-hmm. more than I'm okay with. Mm-hmm. Those are, like I said, the conversations I continuously need to have with myself. And she has with herself, too, when it comes to me.
And it's a toss-up sometimes, especially when it comes to sisters and family, how those conversations will go, you know? But I think that boundary that you're talking about, that you're creating for yourself and these conversations that you're having with yourself is the most important part, because it also informs who you are, right? What choices are you willing to make and what are your goals, and does everything play into each other, right? Yeah. And I think that just makes you a much stronger person over time. You know, you keep doing these small things over and over. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being so honest and raw about that. The last thing I want to touch on is masculinity and femininity. And this is actually specifically only romantically, because I make all the decisions in my life from the time I get up to the time I go to bed. Sometimes I feel like, I don't know if being driven or advocating for yourself or being direct is a masculine quality. Men tell me it's not. It's just who you are in your day to day. But sometimes I find that when I'm doing that in a romantic relationship, and I've heard other women say that, that it comes across masculine, or it can be masculine. And then they feel guilty for that, for advocating for themselves in a romantic relationship. So how do you know if you're in your femininity or not? And how do you know if you're being masculine? And is there anything wrong with that?
It's interesting. I think I strongly, and I don't know a lot about the science around, I'll just preface this by saying, I don't know a lot of the science around masculinity and femininity.
Femininity, yeah.
What I do believe, though, is that, what I genuinely do believe is that everything is empty. And it's the value that we give it that makes it mean, that gives it meaning. Mm-hmm. So I actually don't believe that assertiveness is a masculine or feminine trait.
Right.
It's assertiveness.
Yeah.
But because we associate it more with masculine, with men, because men have predominantly been more in the workforce, et cetera, mm-hmm. you know, then we look at it as a masculine trait.
Yeah.
The same way that sometimes we look at like empathy, because women have historically been the nurturers. So if, you know, you are leaning more to your empathetic side, if you are trying to understand someone's emotion, then you can be considered, that can be like a feminine trait. Mm-hmm. So I genuinely believe that all of those things are empty in a sense. They don't belong to either gender, really, right. And truly. They are essentially tools that you need to strategically learn how to leverage and put down mm-hmm. for the given scenario that is going to help you to achieve your goal, right? Mm-hmm. When I think about my relationship and some of the things that evoke harmony in my relationship, it's not necessarily about I need to be more feminine to get the harmony in my relationship, but I do need to pay attention to the certain qualities that, you know, make my husband feel at peace or make him feel comfortable. And because sometimes he likes the more assertive version of me when it comes to certain aspects of our life. You know what I mean? It's like, here's where we're going. Here's what we're doing. Quote unquote masculine. Here's where we're going. Here's what we're doing. And then there are other areas where he'd rather be the leader. So I think it's more a matter of like understanding what tools are in your toolbox and assessing whether or not you're using them to the benefit of what your overall goal is for that relationship, for that situation, because we're not one way. we're definitely not one way. We do get to choose. We have defaults. We have things that we prefer. We have tendencies. And I don't believe that any of them are even right or wrong. If they're getting you the outcomes that are providing you, if they're getting you the outcomes that you, or the results that you want, everything you're doing is exactly right.
Right.
But if you're experiencing outcomes or results that don't feel in alignment or they don't seem like they're working, then you got to kind of look at, what am I overemphasizing on? What could I be using a little bit more of? Which is why when I work with clients, like I do emotional intelligence assessments, and emotional intelligence assessments, they're not just about empathy, right? They include all the qualities. It includes assertiveness. It includes decision-making, problem-solving, self-regard, self-actualization. There are 15 subscales, none of which are actually proven to be more male than female. They're just things to be aware of in our bodies, in our brains, that enable us to be more in control when it comes to taking action for the desired outcome.
So this is just conditioning then that I'm dealing with, that other, that I hear other women dealing with as well, because we're again attaching assertiveness to masculinity, right? Where and what you're saying is, it makes so much sense to me now. It's just this bullshit story that I've been telling myself probably, and other people tell themselves, because these are all just empty characteristics that in your personality, and you can choose to use this tool for this meeting, or you can choose to not use this tool for this meeting. And that makes a lot of sense. And
well, because your brain is like, your brain is processing 11 million bits of information per second. That means that even in this moment right now, there are 11 million things that your brain could be focusing on.
Yeah.
So like, I wonder how my blush looks on camera. Like, you know what I mean? Like 11 million bits of information. And our brain is constantly looking for ways to make that process more efficient. So it continues to look for patterns to make it make sense. The patterns don't necessarily mean that it's true, but it's just like, oh, okay, this guy has this attribute. This one, I saw this movie. This person was acting this way. That must mean assertiveness is a male trait. Go with that story, run with it. Now we don't have to think about it again.
Yeah.
That's how our brain is constantly making decisions on what stories to tell us or what beliefs we have to guide our actions. The whole reason that people like me exist, like coaches exist, is to slow those stories down, to challenge them. Because if it's not serving you, then let's find a different story to attribute to that trait.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think it's so valuable too. It's just like, it's also just hearing you say it, it's like an aha moment for me, because even when I have conversations with my girlfriends that, like one of them in particular that's married, she wants to say something to her husband and then she's like, oh, you know, I'm not going to do this. It might come across as too bossy or, you know, whatever. And I know in my head that she's associating that with being too masculine or too assertive, and by default thinks she would be rejected because of it, right? When she's telling me this story, my brain's probably like, yeah, maybe she's right. We just need to drop that correlation that we have with like assertiveness being masculine. And if it feels right to say it and it feels right to have the conversation, probably have it and just see what happens.
And I think that that's exactly it, because the theory could be right. She could say it and it could be like, no, thank you.
Right?
Like
right.
Activate social rejection and embarrassment. Maybe.
Yes.
The question is, how often do we stop ourselves from conducting these micro experiments to see what will work or what will not work, because we've already sold ourselves on the story that it just won't fly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it comes back to, if you're going through it that way and it just like, it's not sitting, it's fine for the moment because you're like, oh, I got through that interaction. But if you can't seem to shake it, if you're just like, ugh, like, why do I keep doing this? There's a conversation that needs to be had. And before it needs to be had with the other person, it needs to be had with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is the thing, right? Like in all of these podcast episodes, the one thing that everyone, there's this one thread through every single episode, and it is that it's like, become the scientist of yourself, right? Like, understand what is happening under the skin and in the brain, and like why you feel this way. Have these conversations with yourself. And you said it really plainly and beautifully also. Almost in every single question that I asked you, it kind of came back to that, right? Like, have this conversation with yourself. And I think that if anyone takes anything away from this episode, that is it, right? Like, have the conversation with yourself. Ask yourself the hard questions. Where can people find you?
Yeah, the best place to find me is on Instagram, Coach Lauren Morrison. That's where I usually do most of my interactions. The YouTube channel and other things will be forthcoming, but you can also find out more about my services and what I do on my website, which is www.maketheshiftcoach.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Lauren, so much for spending your time with me. It was so much more than I thought it was going to be. And you were just a delight also to talk to. I don't know if anyone's told you, it's really good energy in these conversations. I feel that from you. So thank you again so much for spending your time. And I'm sure that everyone's going to get a ton out of this episode. And until then, we'll be in touch. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me, Bhavna.